It's amazing when things change. Oh, I'm not talking necessarily about outward things, but inward. When attitudes that we have held to firmly for dear life somehow, some way, get released. When angers that we have nursed, grudges that we have held so very close to our being, just fall by the wayside. Sometimes we don't even know how it happens, but it does. What we've just heard in this story of Joseph, Joseph and his amazing, what is it, the amazing, yeah, whatever, I never can get that one straight. What we've just heard is that moment in the story, that moment of transformation. Now exactly when it happens, we're not altogether sure, but we know the steps that led up to it. This is it's one of the longest stories really in the Bible of a person. The story of Joseph covers more than a fourth of the book of Genesis, the very first book in the Bible. So it must be important, right? Beginning of this story, there is a break when brothers don't dwell together in unity. Of course, how exactly that started, we'll be getting on to a bit later. But the moment of breakage, well, I'm not sure exactly when we can nail it down, but it comes to a head as Joseph, this very character that we encounter in this morning's scripture as being kind of a very important person in a very large nation, Egypt. This person is sold into slavery by his brothers. Oh, that originally they had in mind worse than that. If you know the story, his 10 brothers, not counting Benjamin as his youngest, but his 10 brothers were intending to kill him, or at least 9 of them, until the oldest, Reuben, you know how you remember Reuben's name? They named a sandwich after him, didn't they? Who's the oldest? Nah, you believe that one, I can tell you another one. Reuben had, we can't go that far, but instead, throw him in a hole. And they sold him into slavery. The rest is a long story. But actually, as you look at that break between brothers, and here, I mean, how would you feel if you were sold out by your very own kin? Sold into slavery by your own flesh and blood. At least half flesh and blood. They were half brothers. Well, that was Joseph. Of course, you could say Joseph brought it on for himself. As I read the story of Joseph, Joseph was not your innocent character in all of this. Joseph, you know, as you read the story, those of you who are familiar with it, Joseph had a rather inflated view of himself, perhaps due to some of his dreams. He was a dreamer, and he shared his dreams with his brother, which may have been his undoing. What were his dreams? He had 2 dreams as a young man. Now, he didn't, at that point, share their interpretation, but when he shared it, the dream with his brothers, it seemed rather obvious what it meant. In the first dream, what was it? He had a dream that he and his brothers went out to, harvest some wheat. And they harvested it, and each one made it into stalks of wheat, how that's done. And his wheat, stalk of wheat in his dream, was in the center. And all his brothers' stalks of wheat bowed down to it. Now, if you were a brother of Joseph, how would you be hearing that dream? What was the second dream? Anyone? What did it involve? Anyone? Yes, the sun and stars. He envisioned the sun, the sun, the moon, and 12 stars. He has 12 brothers. 12 stars, that wasn't hard to interpret, bowing down to him. Again, how would you as a brother hear that? And let's add a little bit more to this. Joseph was somewhat of a tattletale. It says right there that his father would send him and he'd report back to his father about what his brothers were doing. That's a real good recipe for having a great relationship with your kin, right? And why did he do that? Well, because he was his father's favorite. You see, this is a prime example of what we would today call a dysfunctional family. We got a lot of those. Actually, I don't know too many families that aren't a little bit dysfunctional. But this one especially was so. And it goes way back, you know? And you think about his father, Jacob. Jacob, who was renamed by God Israel. And so when we talk about the children of Israel, we are talking about his dad's sons and their descendants. Jacob was somewhat of a wheeler and dealer. Do you remember his story? No, he had an older brother. And in that society, the older brother was supposed to get all the cookies. But he managed to finagle with his mom's help. Do you remember that story? To get his father, who was a little old and decrepit and a little blind, to bless him instead on his deathbed. And so he sort of got all the cookies himself. But of course, his brother didn't like that, and he had to run away from his brother. You know, this is a long story. He ended up running away to a different place, and he had his eye on this one woman by the name of Rachel. And he wanted her to be his wife. And so he worked with her father and managed to work so many years in order to get her, and then her father kind of wheeled and dealed with him and supplanted her older sister in her place. And so he had to work so many more years to get Rachel, which, you know, starts the ball rolling, you know? That's why he wasn't as connected with his first wife as he was with Rachel, whom he really wanted, and Joseph and Benjamin were finally the children that Rachel had after a long, long, long time. And the other brothers were from the other wife and some of the other, they had multiple marriages back then, and we don't even need to pay attention to that. But anyway, it's like, I guess the point of it all is that the things we struggle with now have their roots elsewhere. You know, we often talk about how dysfunctions within families go generation to generation to generation. You've heard about persons who have been abused as children. Oftentimes, and it's not a guarantee, but oftentimes end up being abusers themselves because the sins of the fathers are visited upon the children. Did you catch that? You know, things, what goes around comes around, don't we say that a lot? And well, this is the case with Joseph. And hopefully you know the story. It's so long, I don't want to pay so much attention to it, but he ended up, you know, because his brothers sold him into slavery, he ended up in a very desperate situation. Of course, there were just some bright spots along the way. I mean, he ended up being bought by this one fella who saw in him some really good things and appointed him manager. But then he had to deal with this guy's wife. And you know how this relationship between the sexes can get. And he ended up on the bad end of that thing and ended up in jail. You've heard the story, but even in jail, that's where his ability to interpret dreams came into play, as he overheard the dreams of this cupbearer and this baker who were employees, or I guess slaves really, of the king. The emperor, the pharaoh, and he interpreted the dreams of them. And down the road, that was remembered, such to the point that when Pharaoh needed an interpretation of the dream, this cupbearer who had had his dream interpreted, oh yeah, Joseph! And Joseph interpreted for Pharaoh a dream Pharaoh had. It involved sevens. He didn't need to know the dream, but his interpretation of the dream was that there are going to be 7 years of good crops and then 7 years of famine. Pharaoh appointed him, as you know the story, to take care of this, because he was apparently a good manager instead, in addition to being a good dreamer and interpreter. And he managed to save up all the grain such that when famine eventually came, there was grain to cover. And it's kind of a really neat story, but let me get to the dark side of the story in a minute. What this did, though, for Joseph was put him in a place down the road where when that famine was affecting his family, his very brothers, when they were without food, his father, perhaps you know the story, said, "Ah, I've heard they have food down in Egypt." And he sent his sons, not Benjamin, but his sons, down to get some of that food. And who do they encounter in Egypt but who? Joseph. You know the story. Of course, they didn't recognize their brother. He'd grown up and grown on, and he was an Egyptian for all they knew. But there he was. And they came before him asking, and Joseph, I'm never sure as I'm reading the story what exactly he has in mind. Because he's continuing the wheeling and dealing of his father. You notice this. He didn't outright say, why didn't he say, "Ah, it's me"? Why didn't he say, "Well, here's food"? Instead, he listened to him and he heard about Benjamin, his brother, and said, "Ah, you've got a brother. Well, I'm not going to deal with you until you bring that very brother back." So they had to go and get Benjamin, convince their father to let him go and bring Benjamin, because Benjamin sort of replaced Joseph in his father's eyes as being favorite. Brought Benjamin back. But even then, he wheeled and dealed a little bit. You know, families kind of do this. And I'm wondering as I'm reading if he still has in his craw that he's nursing that grudge there, that anger in his heart for his brothers. Because he wheels and deals and arranges for some of that grain to go in the pack of all the, you know, he gives them the food, the grain, but then he manages to sneak, have snuck into the backpack of Benjamin some cup or something like that that belongs to Pharaoh. And then he arranges for them to be stopped and searched. And that's found. And Benjamin is seized. And he sends them back. And the brothers are beside themselves. You know the story. They're beside themselves because they had guaranteed their father that Benjamin would be okay, and he's not. He's in prison. But of course, you know the rest of the story. Finally, the father reneges. They use up all the grain and stuff, and he sends them back. What you see, what you heard this morning, was the point. Something changed. Something was released. Now, in this story, I don't hear Joseph praying to God to ask that this anger be released, that he somehow let go of this grudge. But still, that door is opened. Even though he perhaps has not sought it or asked for it, still God has provided. An amazing thing along the way is he has had transformed in his own understanding his own story. For instead of seeing what happened as being that his brothers sold him out, there's a shifting that he sees God part of the picture. Instead of his brothers selling him out, God sent him as an answer to this moment, so that God's people, the children of Israel, would not starve, but in fact have life. Of course, there's more to the story, and that's what I meant by the darkness, because our Bible does not paint rosy pictures. It tells it like it is. I believe that this story is in there for a reason. And the reason is historical, theological, philosophical, and other reasons. Historical reasons, because it explains how the children of Israel ended up in Egypt, paving the way for that pivotal, important story in the Bible called the Exodus, which is the formation story of God's people. But how did they get to Egypt in the first place? This explains that historically. But also, on a theological level, it deals with darkness, because the story is told Joseph continued to wheel and deal. In fact, when people came to him, especially the Egyptians, because they didn't have any food, he dealt for Pharaoh. And he first took all their livestock. They gave their livestock for grain, which helped them to live. And then when all of that was left, you know, when they didn't have any more of that, they sold their land and even their own lives to Pharaoh. The Egyptians became slaves to Pharaoh, in a sense, because of the actions of Joseph. Joseph wheeled and dealed. And when finally, you know, the things were righted after that, the land belonged to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh kind of let the people use the land, but they had to give Pharaoh 5%? No, it was 25%? I forget how much it was of all of their crops. It explained that, but it also would explain kind of the animosity between the Egyptians and these children of Israel who lived in the land of milk and honey. That was where Goshen was called, you know, because of the best land. That's where they settled. Joseph had made it that way. And in a sense, Joseph paved the way because he didn't live forever. Joseph eventually died. And a day came, as the beginning of the book of Exodus starts out, a day came when there was a Pharaoh who did not remember Joseph. And that was the beginning of the downfall of how God's people got into slavery. It's how they got to Egypt. But it was really through the work of Joseph that it happened. That's why I say that the Bible is a very real book. It deals with, you know, how we are often responsible for our own problems. We can't necessarily blame them on other people. Sometimes they're passed down from generation to generation, but that's not an excuse. The good news through it all is that, and this is very clear in the book of Genesis and how it ends, that God has a part in this. Now, maybe God wasn't necessarily part of Joseph's wheeling and dealing, but God paved the way to enable his children to be saved. And in fact, for the whole earth, the known earth at that point, because as the story shared, it's talking about Egypt and the environs, the world as they know it at that point, to make it through a severe famine. That was God's salvation at that point. Of course, in the next chapter of the story, in Exodus, we have another person sent who is God's hand, and that's Moses. But again, that's another story. But through it all, what was not necessarily intended for good, but perhaps for evil, the negative things, God transforms into positive. Just like with those grudges we nurse, those angers we hold on to, those struggles that are part of every person's lives, and sometimes even at the very center of the life of a family. God is a part of that. And I don't know exactly where or when it happens. Somewhere along the line, these things fall by the wayside. And we have those moments when brothers and sisters are able to dwell together in unity. Such moments are like, as the psalmist said, oil on the head. You know, that's kind of a funny picture. Sharing the toys. Dew on Mount Hermon. Fresh breath of air on a hot summer day. Good news. It's good news. May God be doing that in your life. Don't necessarily be like Joseph, and I don't know, he may have been praying, but continue to ask, seek, to knock. And God will multiply. God will open the door. God will give. Amen?